Thought Bubble Audio.
Look, up in the sky!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Welcome to Beer with Geeks with Tim and Frank.
Who are you?
I'm Batman.
I am Iron Man.
Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
My name is Inigo Montoya.
You're a wizard, Harry.
A couple of guys with a couple of beers and a whole lot of pop culture nostalgia.
Make it so, number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
Name the dog Indiana.
Life finds a way.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Now sit back and crack open a cold one. Because it's time for Beer with Geeks.
It comes in pints?
Shaken, not stirred.
Great Scott!
I was way off. I knew it started with an S, though.
Hi, and welcome to Beer with Geeks, where two geeks geek out with beer. I'm Tim, and with me, as always, is my very questionable choice as a producer friend, Frank. How are you today?
I was doing well. Now I'm questioning my whole existence.
Are you? Well, because you are a producer as well as the host of this show.
I am.
Co-host of the show.
That is true.
I don't want to undermine myself.
Yeah,
there.
Take the credit for whatever you deserve. Yeah.
I introduce the show, Frank.
You do?
Yeah.
I
have a small part to play.
You have a major part to play. You're half this show.
There's an inflection that is necessary in the beginning of this show that people are used to.
That only you can deliver.
Yeah. Isn't it weird when you actually listen to a podcast and somebody else starts the show and you're like, that's not how things are supposed to be?
That's, I think about that every time, say, you're not here and I intro the show.
Yep.
Then I'm like,
I think it on Supergirl TV Talk, because like sometimes you're not there and I'm like, this is weird. How does one host a podcast, even though I host even though I start the intro on two out of those three podcasts. Yeah,
yeah.
I know. Yeah. Wow. What a day.
Crazy.
You know what? That conversation was slightly insane.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What beer are you drinking?
I've gone back to the Switchback Ale. Mm-hmm.
I switched back.
Oh, I should have said that. Switched back to Switchback. I loved this beer last time we had it. I picked it up in Maine. They brew it in Vermont. It's not easy. There's no distributor down here in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. So I've had a hard time finding it. But maybe there is one, but it's a very small distributor. I went to a rather large liquor store that had all manner of imported beers and domestic beers, and they had a great variety. So I picked up a six pack of the Switchback. There we go.
There you go.
And last time I was in Maine, I picked up some extra as well. So I've had quite a bit in my fridge that I've been holding on to, and I decided today was a special enough occasion that I would crack this open, and I just love it. I just love it so much. It's just so steady and dependable and delicious. It's exactly what I'm in the mood for.
That's cool. I am glad that you're drinking that.
What have you picked up?
I am drinking from your fridge a Abbey Ale, St. Bernardus, ABT-12. It is a Trappist. It is a Trappist Belgian, and it's quite good.
It's excellent.
Yeah, it's really good.
I love it so much.
Yeah. It's a little heavier than I would normally want for a Belgian. So it's not one that I'd be like, give me another.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'd be like, I'm going to savor this one for a while.
It's a slow sipper.
Potentially over the next couple of weeks. Nah, just kidding.
Wink, wink, Suicide Squad cast. Oh, boy. And if you follow those guys on Twitter, you'll understand that joke.
Yep.
So why don't we talk about, speaking of following things on Twitter, there's been a lot of news on Twitter.
In a galaxy far, far away.
In a galaxy far, far away. About
Hollywood, California.
Ooh, boy. Okay. So Star Wars. Heard of it?
I've heard of it.
It's a thing near and dear to both of our hearts.
Indeed.
And there's been a lot of shakeups in the galaxy far, far away.
Shake it up.
Yeah.
Shake it up.
Yeah. Where should we begin?
What the F Star Wars?
What the,
That's what we should start with.
What the
R2 bleep to Star Wars?
Exactly.
Oh my. So we don't normally talk about news. So, but there's so many behind the scenes jiggers, I guess, going on that this is a conversation that we would just have, and like, as opposed to like the contrived conversations that we always have, you know, let's talk about this movie for half an hour. But you and I need to talk about Star Wars now.
We do. We need to talk about the state of Star Wars. You know,
as of today, as of recording this, just a few hours ago, it was announced that J.J. Abrams is stepping up to write and direct Star Wars Episode 9, The Return of the Jedi, and which is what I'm calling it.
The Return of the Jedi Strikes Back is what I'm calling
it. Yeah, or The Revenge of the Return of the Jedi. I call it The Return of the Return of the Jedi because The Force Awakens is basically The Force has a new hope.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's, the format is similar.
Yes.
So I just don't want to watch a J.J. Abrams movie, a Star Wars J.J. Abrams movie again, that I'm just watching Return of the Jedi with a new generation.
So here's the thing. So there is the Star Wars story group, right, at Lucasfilm, who are charged with nailing down the overall story. And that doesn't mean just in the films. It means in Star Wars Rebels, a TV show. It means in the novels. It means in all places where that are canon, where Star Wars stories are told.
That's correct.
They ostensibly steer the overall direction, and the authors of the books and the creators of the show and the directors,
screenwriters, the directors,
they all follow what comes down from on high. It's like write the Ten Commandments tablets and deliver it down to the people.
That's right.
So they, again, you know, in theory, are supposed to be guiding the story. Oh, we've got we know what the story is going to be, blah, blah, blah. Kind of like Kevin Feige-ing it, where they're sort of like, we've mapped out the next 10 years of Marvel movies.
That's right. And if you come up with a better idea than what we've come up with, then we are willing to change it.
We hammer it out. We make it fit with the overall direction that we've got.
Don't throw the sand out of the sandbox. Play with the sand that we bought for you already.
Exactly. Now, they keep bringing in these auteur directors.
Yes.
Like Rian Johnson, like Gareth Edwards, like Colin Trevorrow,
yep.
who are, you know, mainly indie directors and writers in their own right.
Yep.
Great creators who make great films.
Yeah.
You know, that we've enjoyed their past, their indie stuff. And Lord and Miller fall into that camp as well.
Definitely.
Right. But then they keep sort of in a couple of, not Rian Johnson, but with Gareth Edwards with,
Because Rogue somebody One. Else stepped in at the end.
But they let him keep a director credit because he cooperated with them enough, I guess.
Yes.
But then Lord and Miller were canned from Han Solo and they brought in
for too much improv.
Too much improv. Which is fine. I mean,
enough sand is what that problem was.
No, it's not like too much sand. Like they were playing with
sand, yeah.
Like, all right, listen, we said sand castles and you're making like
sand palaces.
Yeah,
there's a difference.
Right. You're making like pyramids. Like
don't make Taj Mahal sand.
Yeah, exactly. So, if it didn't fit, it's fine. I love Lord and Miller. You know, I love their stuff. Lego movie is great.
Yeah.
They make, you know, the Last Man on Earth on Fox is one of theirs, and it's great. Like, a whole bunch of their stuff is great that I enjoy. But maybe they just weren't right for the direction that the story group and Kathleen Kennedy, the head of Lucasfilm, want. The Colin Trevorrow thing. So, Colin Trevorrow was set to direct Episode 9.
Yep.
Untitled. Right and direct, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Right and direct, Episode 9. You know, fresh off his success from Jurassic World.
Yes.
And
previous before that, he had only made one indie movie, Safety Not Guaranteed.
Safety Not Guaranteed, which I never saw, but now I'm very, very interested in seeing it after hearing it spoken about so much in these conversations about this stuff. So, but apparently,
that his safety was not guaranteed.
Have you seen it?
No, I have not.
Okay. So apparently it has a lot of heart and, it's just a great overall movie, but it sounds like, it just wasn't what he was delivering on Episode 9 was not what they needed, wanted, etc.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling, I told you this earlier today.
Yep.
My feeling is that there is so apparently he's difficult to work with.
Yes. I had heard
that's been documented.
We had
actually
heard that all the way back to Jurassic World.
Yes.
That the only reason he wasn't canned on Jurassic World is because Spielberg hired him personally.
Yeah, and vouched for him.
And vouched for him, and that wasn't going to happen. Yeah. And he did deliver a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say it's a great movie. It's a good
movie.
It's very good.
It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun.
I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
But that's definitely, we're not going to let this fail kind of push from Universal and Spielberg.
Yes.
And then he did Book of Henry, which flopped hard.
Never saw it.
Exactly. Nobody did.
Did you see it?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. No, it flopped super hard.
Wow. Okay.
And I see a lot.
You do. I'm surprised you didn't.
You did.
Who was in that I would know? Was anyone famous in it?
Yeah, the mom.
Because I remember the name.
Mom in it was famous, but I can't remember who it
okay,
is.
Okay, that's fine. We don't have to look up. It's not
okay.
Not worth it, I don't think. Okay. Nothing important. So he had one big success, one big flop.
He had a good indie success. Mm-hmm. He had a huge success with Jurassic World.
Yeah.
He had a huge flop with Book of Henry, and now he's still big from his britches, I guess. On Star Wars, and we talked about this on text that you theorized that maybe the passing of Carrie Fisher might have influenced the way that that Kathleen Kennedy and the Star Wars story group and Trevorrow wanted to take the final piece.
That's what I think. So obviously they needed to address that in the script, right? And we've been told that will somehow be addressed in either episode 8 or 9. You know, there'll be some kind of, we're going to get, I don't remember the exact words that Rian Johnson used, but like a fitting send off for Princess Leia, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. Obviously they're scrambling because we have been told, it was confirmed, I think by Rian Johnson, that episode 9 was meant to be like Leia's movie. Episode 7 was Han's movie, 8 is Luke's, and 9 was meant to
be Leia's.
Now obviously that can't happen.
Right.
Thankfully she finished filming what she had to film for episode 8. So at least we get a nice bow on that, but how do we transition it?
But it could be like an Empire Strikes Back bow, which is not really a bow because it, you know what I mean? Like
exactly.
It's the middle of a trilogy.
Right. We don't know what her character's fate will be. It could be, like a cliffhanger type.
They could pull a Proximo in Gladiator and do some, you know, because Oliver Reed died while filming Gladiator.
Oh,
and so they had to do some, you know, here's some shot from a scene that we're not going to use. Here's a body double, and here's him getting stabbed in the shadows.
Yeah.
Blah blah blah. Movie 17 years old. Sorry, spoiler.
It would seem very anticlimactic to do something like that.
Definitely.
You know.
But maybe that's what Trevorrow wanted to do, and Kathleen Kennedy was like,
So I think between him
being
difficult.
Maybe that's what Kathleen Kennedy wants to do, and Trevorrow was like,
So I think between him being difficult and possibly added to that. There being difficulty around, you know, the direction they should go with Princess Leia and her fate, I would say those factors put together probably point to his dismissal.
Yep.
They just couldn't agree on that. He was too hard to work with. And you know what? You're not worth it. We'll get somebody else. And pretty quickly, you know, I mean, how many days was it? Like less than a week.
Less than a week. Yeah, definitely.
5 days maybe.
Maybe.
And Trevorrow and J.J. Abrams is officially taking the helm, and
Chris Terrio is helping him write it.
Argo, Justice League,
Batman v Superman.
Justice League too, right? Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So great, but, you know, great screenwriter with great credits.
Justice League is interesting though, because one, it hasn't come out yet, so we talked about this, so like we can say Argo is a great film.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Hands down.
BVS is a divided film.
It is.
Justice League hasn't come
out yet.
Well
written, though. Well written. Even if I don't enjoy it, it's still a well written film.
You think so?
I think so.
Yeah. Even if you don't even like the characterizations of some people, that's not all in the script. That's all in the director.
True.
And the choices. That, for instance, we don't like Batman killing people. It doesn't say in the script, Batman kills all these people. It's the way, you know what I mean?
Even if it is in the script, that's not my even if I disagree with the choices the author made, he still wrote it well.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Fair. I would agree with that. Justice League's interesting, one, because it hasn't come out yet.
Sure.
But second, we don't know how many rewrites Joss Whedon has done on it.
Right.
Because he's getting a writing credit.
Yes,
which means
he's
done
a substantial
amount of writing. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean he's changed 90%. He could have changed, I'd say 30 to 40% changes gives him a writing credit.
I think there is a WGA rule
for how much
percentage you need to have touched before you are mandated to get a credit. I don't know what that is. Might even be 10%. I don't know. Yeah. But I'm sure someone listening will know what the Writers Guild requires.
But that means that it's a good enough for the, if it's good enough for the Writers Guild to be like, hey, you get a credit, then maybe we can or cannot give him all the credit or all the bad the badness. But you know what I mean? Because we just don't know what bits are what.
Right.
So we can at least say J.J. has delivered a great Star Trek film.
Mm-hmm.
He's delivered a very good Star Wars film.
Mm-hmm.
He's delivered an okay sequel to Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. I agree with this.
So then, what is his sequel to Star Wars?
Right. Do we worry that he you know...
That's why I'm worried about the return of the Return of the Jedi.
Right.
Because, let's face it, Star Trek 2009
yes.
is just Star Wars. It hits a lot of the yes. same beats that A New Hope yes. does. And then you watch The Force Awakens, and it hits a lot of the same beats that A New Hope does.
Yes.
And then so
he's now arguably he's remade A New Hope twice.
Right, exactly. And so then when you get to Into Darkness, are you running it doesn't really hit the same beats that Wrath of Khan does, but it's got so much of that in there, like jarbled together. Are we just going to get a Return of the Jedi-esque situation? It really all depends on where Episode 8 leaves us. From what all accounts say,
yeah.
episode 8 is fresh and different, and it's going to take the heroes and villains in an unexpected place.
So my thinking and the reason why I brought up the story group is because I feel like they won't let that happen.
Okay.
I feel like they, by the time we get to episode 9, will have sketched out where they want the story to end.
Yeah.
I think that there are probably tentpole story beats mm-hmm. That are mandated that you must get to this and this place in episode 7, this and this place in 8, and this and this in 9, mm-hmm. and that probably JJ and Larry Kasdan were given... You know, like, all right, these are the three things that have to happen. You know,
in Force
these
Awakens.
Characters have to meet each yeah. other. Han has to die and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And from there, it's sort of like fill in the blanks however you will. I'm oversimplifying it grossly, but I think it's probably something to that effect.
I don't disagree with you there.
Okay. I think that's probably what's happening in episode 8 and same in episode 9. So there are probably immovable posts mm-hmm. that have to happen.
Yep.
But he could, of course, stylistically or you know, add story beats that are reminiscent of episode 9. That wouldn't be...
Of episode 6,
sorry, yes. That wouldn't be... You know, there is the whole ring theory thing with Star Wars where everything comes around again.
Which I also don't disagree with either. I in some ways like that.
I do too, but not when it's too on the nose, right?
It's right.
So if we have a second Starkiller base that gets destroyed again.
Right, but it's not finished yet. Right. And you know, instead of teddy bears, it's little kitties
right.
or something
and
like
Snoke
that.
Snoke gets thrown down a shaft and lightning and everything.
Right.
You know, then it's like, all right, buddy, like let's
you said Snoke, but I imagined Kylo Ren.
Kylo
I'm
Ren.
Good.
Sure.
I'm there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Right. Okay. If Kylo Ren kills Snoke like in a very similar fashion, you know, even if
I throw if somebody Kylo... else's popcorn in the air because I don't buy popcorn right. myself. Yeah.
There you go. But you know what I mean? Like, that would be a little disappointing. It'd be a little disappointing.
Yep.
I have to think they've heard that feedback.
Oh,
I
definitely.
Have to think they've heard that feedback loud and clear. JJ is very wary of repeating mistakes. He's the kind of director who beats himself up. When Chewie and Leia didn't have enough of an emotional moment in episode mm-hmm. 7, like in the director's commentary, he says like, oh, this is my biggest regret about this movie is that I should have had them have a moment.
Yep.
Like, obviously they deserve to have a moment.
Yep.
So he, you know, he takes those things to heart. He really regrets the whole, no, that's not Khan thing.
Yep. I've heard him
say
that multiple times.
He really regrets it. So I think that he, and even lens flares, he tones them down
yep.
every time a little bit.
Yep.
So I think that he takes fan feedback very seriously and won't walk into the same trap. And not just
it's
fan feedback.
Ah,
there it is. Not just fan feedback. He's a good filmmaker.
Oh, yeah.
Who is critical of his own work.
Star Trek or Star Wars or not. I've always enjoyed a J.J. Abrams film.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Even like Into Darkness, which I think is... Fine.
Fine.
I think it's even.
I like
good.
It better. I like it better than I like a lot of other movies.
Right.
You know?
Oh yeah.
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 So not like it better than like a lot of other Star Trek movies. So,
yeah.
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 So, you know, it's the movie will be good regardless. But I do hope he doesn't fall into the trap of remake. You know, Return of the Jedi.
And here's the other bit. We're beating around the Kathleen Kennedy Bush.
Yeah.
Who is one of the most. By the numbers, by the data, one of the most successful
producers
in the
time.
History of Hollywood.
Yeah.
She is unbelievably good at her job.
Yes.
And there's a reason these people keep leaving the production, because they are not up to Kathleen Kennedy's high standards.
Yes, exactly.
And she, if anybody, like, you can say all you want that Colin Trevorrow made you know, Safety Not Guaranteed and Jurassic World are good movies.
Sure.
You can say all you want, but look at Kathleen Kennedy's CV and tell me which one of those movies is truly awful.
It is like, it's nearly unimpeachable. Her resume is like almost perfect. As close to perfect as someone with a career as long as hers is, as close as it can get. So I completely agree. Her resume, it speaks for itself.
You're okay. Gonna, yeah. So, yeah. So if I can just pinpoint to the, so if you go to IMDb, the top four movies that she's produced, you know, they okay. do like the top four.
I'm going to put this in the show notes if anybody beginning. Wants to follow along.
Top four, Schindler's List, Back to the Future, Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and The Sixth Sense.
And those are just the ones that are like under the known for section on IMDb.
Yep.
That doesn't even begin to scratch the surface.
Nope, not even close. So basically, any Spielberg movie,
yep,
she's there.
Mm-hmm. A good bunch of,
like pretty much. Actually, when I say that, I think pretty much all of Spielberg
Zemeckis movies too. Like, yeah, she has a really
She was the producer that took a chance on E.T., if I'm not mistaken, something like that. You know, also one of the biggest movies of all time. Even now,
yeah,
still one of the biggest movies of all time. So we can look at, oh no, the troubles of the directors or the writers or whatever, but at the head honcho says it's no good, I'm gonna say it's no good.
I trust her. Yeah. I trust her judgment. I think that she was given, listen, she was put in this job by George Lucas. She was his successor. She was a handpicked successor. And I think that one of the reasons why he chose her is because she has an outstanding sense of judgment.
Yep.
She has an outstanding sense of what works, what doesn't. She respects the story above all.
Mm-hmm.
And her judgment has never, in my opinion, I've never seen a reason to think why she's wrong.
Well, okay, so there's two arguments to be made here, though.
Okay.
You could say that she has been wrong quite a bit and has recognized that because these people keep getting fired.
Yes.
You know, like Gareth Edwards was replaced a bit on Rogue One. Ron Howard came in to replace Phil Lord and Chris Miller on Han Solo. Colin Trevorrow is out, and J.J. Abrams is back in. Michael Arndt was out of writing.
That's right.
You know, there's been a lot of turnaround on these things. The most consistent one has actually been Episode 8.
That's true. Yeah, because Rian Johnson...
Out of these new movies, since she's been the head of Lucasfilm...
Yeah, it's the only one that hasn't had a major shakeup. Like,
no,
yeah.
He wrote the movie, he directed, and everyone's like, wow, what a great job.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah.
When was the last thing you heard something bad about the production of Episode 8?
You're right.
Trick question. There hasn't been anything.
You're
bad,
right.
Really.
I feel, though, that someone's ability to see a mistake and, like as much as that's true, she may have hired these people, she ended up, you know, rescinding the offer, but she fixed the movies before they were released.
Agreed.
She hasn't released a movie that was subpar. Even Rogue One, where Gareth Edwards was replaced by Tony Gilroy.
Tony Gilroy, that's it. Thank you. Yeah.
Even in that case, the movie did not suffer for it.
No, it's a good movie.
It did not suffer for it.
It could be. So maybe people say it's a little boring. Maybe there's like something like, oh, this thing could have been a little better or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's a good movie. Critics and audiences agree it's a good movie.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I thought it was a great movie. It has an 85% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know how much money it made, but, you know,
it made enough to keep making Star Wars stories.
Right.
You know.
So I'm not. If anything, I credit her with saving those films before
Agreed. They
go bad.
Recognizing your mistake and fixing it quickly.
I value that more than not making a mistake at all.
And so, and then on top of that, so let's even talk about Han Solo. You hear about all these problems, you know, under, you know, Phil Lord and Chris Miller. It's this and this and this and this and this. Ron Howard comes on. Have you heard anything bad since then?
No.
Not one thing.
No.
Not one thing.
No.
Have you heard?
I would caution that a little bit because there is such, you know, there is like control over the PR and but
I agree.
But we did hear rumblings after the fact that there was some unrest under Lord and Miller.
Yep.
And we did hear that everyone applauded when Ron Howard was on set.
Yep.
Cast and crew applauded when Ron Howard was announced as coming in. So
yep.
Clearly they are the people working on the film are happier.
Happy about it. Ron Howard makes good movies. Even if you don't like all of his movies, like you might say, like let's say Inferno didn't do that well, people didn't really care for it, whatever. It's still a well shot, well made movie. It's not the greatest thing in the entire world, but it's not the worst either.
And it's Star Wars we're talking about here. Right. There is so much going into these movies to guarantee that they don't fail, to guarantee that they're not poorly made films with a bad story.
They're like banks. They're too big to fail.
Yeah. And so many precautions are being taken. I am not worried about these changes. I'm not worried about like, oh man, they don't know what they're doing. I will concede that I sometimes think that maybe the story group hasn't really fully sketched out where everything is going to go. I do think that now with episode 8 being, you know, production almost finished, that they will have episode 9 like, okay, we have to take it here. Like that will be sketched out. I think maybe when they started episode 7, they didn't know where episode 9 would end.
Sure.
I think that might be the case. But by now, I think they do know.
Oh, definitely.
You know, at least directionally, pretty close to where episode 9 will end.
Well, that's an interesting point that you've made because it's not, because writing is still at its core. You can have as many story groups as you want. Writing at its core is still a solitary job. It's you and the machine or with the tool that you're using to write.
Yeah.
And things change. Characters take on life of their own. Stories shift and are they're movable, fluid beings. And so a story group can map stuff out all they want, but that doesn't mean that it's ever going to stay that way, because one day someone's going to walk in to a room and go, you know what? That was a good idea yesterday, but I don't really like it today.
That's true to an extent. In these Disney story groups, there is very tight control. Basically, the story groups are the writer's boss.
Yes.
So like they do have to, the writer does have to report to them and it's not going to pass. Like they get a yes or no.
Right.
Like, no, this went against what we said.
It's almost like the way a TV show is run. It's very similar.
The executive
to that.
Producers, the showrunners, you know, have thumbs up, thumbs down authority over the writers.
Right. And it's the writer's room.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then on top of that, everybody gets an episode to write or multiple episodes to write. But that episode can come back and go, no, good. That's not what we talked about. You got to change that. Right. You got to shift this over here.
So while that's true to an extent, I think in Disney it's very different. Having read, there's a book called Creativity, Inc. that's about Pixar, and it talks about sort of the founding of Pixar is by Ed Catmull, who was like the founder of Pixar. It talks about the early days all the way up till maybe Toy Story 3 or so. And
Michael Arndt,
exactly. Yeah. And he talks about the way the Pixar story group works. Mm. And my understanding is that this is how Disney's other story groups work as well. And they have like a brain trust that meets, I don't remember if it's daily or weekly or whatever, but they meet.
What an awesome job.
Right? And it's like, it's all the names you know, like Brad Bird, Pete Docter.
Sure.
John.
Cena.
No, I'm using my lookup.
I know it's not John Cena.
Pixar.
But now John Cena is the only name in my head.
Lasseter.
Yep.
You know, all those guys get together and what they do is they read, you know, new drafts of the script and they pick it apart and they ask, how does this work? How does that work? This is inconsistent with this character because before he said this and now he's saying this. So that makes it seem like that's not his motivation. It's not consistent with what he said before. Mm. They pick it apart, but lovingly.
Yes.
To make it be as perfect as it can be.
And look at Pixar's track record.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think that is what is happening at Marvel and it's at Star Wars as well, Lucasfilm as well. And I think that decisions that are being made, if they're being made, is because, okay, you are refusing to, you know, change the script or change the film to match up with what the story group is saying. The story group gets the yes or no.
The story group is the boss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Auteurs.
Bye. You know, like if you're not going to, shape up, then ship out.
You know, it's like, but it's the way people talk about it. It's like, it's you know, like, I don't know. Can't think of the right word, like this weird community, like, you know, hippie community in the 60s where everybody's the same and equal, man. And
yeah.
Like, whenever else. This is a business.
It's a business.
It's a job.
It's a business.
You do what your bosses tell you. Unless they're like, so after you write the script, I need you to go kill this person, you know, for the blood sacrifice, to Mickey Mouse.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you sign up, you do what your boss tells you to do.
Right.
Whether you agree with how that goes or not, go work somewhere else.
You were with any kind of creative job, there is a level of like, you're doing a creative thing, but, you know, you do have a boss who says like, no, we need to put the logo here. Like,
right.
You can't redesign the logo on this design, your design packaging. Like, This is the company's logo. You have to use this. And there are certain mandated things you need to do, no matter what the creative work is.
And we both do creative jobs in their own way.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, like, you know, like, well, documented on the podcast that I'm a teacher, like, I can be like, I'm going to do this unit on Scooby-Doo or whatever because I can't wait to talk about mysteries and Edgar Allan Poe, and I'm going to bring I'm going to have them like write a term paper on Scooby-Doo. And as much fun as that sounds, that's not school.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. And so, and I might be like, "Oh, but you know, it was a good idea or whatever."
But you can't just do whatever you want to do.
I can't do whatever I want to do. There are bosses, there's schools, there are administrators, there's state curriculum, there's United States curriculum. Right. Like you have to adhere to the rules.
Right. And each of those things in a movie studio has like an analog, of like there's the story group, there's the head of the studio, there's all these levels, you know, all the way up to the head to the top of Disney. If the mouse says you're doing this, you're doing this. The mouse says no, then it's no.
That's right.
So I think really that's what it comes down to is that they've hired these indie directors for their ability to infuse heart or humor or whatever it is because they wanted to, you know, make an adventure movie or make a samurai movie or make a cowboy movie in the Star Wars universe. And what they're finding is, okay, in at least a couple of these cases, maybe this person wasn't exactly the right fit because they are used to having more autonomy than we can really afford to give them.
It's really tough going from an independent film setting where you're the boss, you do it, you do like five jobs to make sure you get the movie done, and you know, and you make the last call, and then you go to a film studio, and that's not how it works.
Yeah.
You're there to make sure that the film studio, their product that comes, gets pumped out. And that's hard for a creative person because we tell kids and ourselves from day one of creativity, you can color that bus whatever color you want.
Right.
Because you're the creative person.
Right, right.
And that's fine when you're four.
Yeah.
But
Or when you're an independent creator. If you work for yourself, you're in your own boss, then it's fine.
Color that bus whatever. But when you sign up for the company, you got to do it this way. It's the Xanadu problem, Frank.
Yes!
It's the Sonny Malone problem. I want to make this album art the way I want to. Well, too bad. Like, you work for this company.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to go be an auteur. You know, Jon Favreau did it. He worked for the big company. He worked for the mouse. And then he was like, you know what? I'm tired of the system. I've got to go make the movie that I want to refresh myself. And now he's back.
Yes.
In the company. Yes,
exactly.
Just like Sonny Malone.
Yes. And, you know, it's very ironic, too, because George Lucas, like, tried to get away from the studio.
And now
system
and
in now, making Star Wars.
And now like, it's the mouse.
And now it's the mouse. It's the biggest studio of all.
Yep.
Is calling the shots. But they have such a good track record of telling good stories that like it's one of the best things. If it couldn't be in George Lucas's hands, like the person who created it and cradled it, say what you will about the prequels, about what happened afterwards. Yes, I think he made some mistakes. But if it had to be in a studio's hands, I would rather it be in Disney's hands than anybody else's.
You know, and here's the interesting thing. So they have a good track record of making movies. The time they didn't have a good track record was the 70s and the early 80s when Star Wars was being made.
There you go.
So there's always been safety at Star Wars, I guess. You know what I mean? You can say what you want about the prequels, but, you know, the generation below us loves them.
Yeah. And they were hugely successful.
We all went to go see them more
multiple
than
times,
once.
Yeah.
And don't pretend that you didn't. You definitely did. You definitely thought The Phantom Menace was the best thing you'd ever seen when you were a kid or even a teenager or whatever because it was new Star Wars.
Yes.
And then upon reflection, you can look back and be like, well, maybe it's not the best. But you know what? You still kind of like it.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Just a bit.
You can say what you want all you want, but you know you like Qui-Gon Jinn.
You
know you do. Like, if you don't like Liam Neeson in the Star Wars universe, what are you doing?
Lying. That's what you're doing.
Lying. You're lying. Yeah. And he will find you. Yeah. So.
Oh, man. Oh, this is a good vent session.
It was like a weird vent session about something we're not involved in at all.
Who are we mad at?
I don't know.
Who are we mad at?
Okay. I have one last question.
Okay.
Do you think it's weird that all executives at Disney are mandated to wear mouse ears? It's weird, right? So they can be like, the mouse told me. And they're like, that's right. And they have to take the ears off. It's very weird and culty there.
Okay.
For a big multi-billion dollar corporation. Uh-huh. It's very strange.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't You didn't read that?
No.
No, under the no pants, you know, because they don't wear pants.
Right, yeah. Sure.
Inside the big white gloves. I don't know. Like, yeah.
They're all called cast members.
They're all called,
even the producers. that's confusing.
And once a year, they have to put on those costumes and go into Disney World or Disneyland.
That would actually be great for them. If every executive.
Kathleen Kennedy is just, I don't know, Pedro the airplane.
Whatever.
From Saludos Amigos. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Just flying around the park.
Bob Iger, like all of them. Like, everyone should have to like spend one day in one of the parks.
I would pay.
In costume.
I would pay big money for me to have Bob Iger walk around Disneyland in a Goofy costume all day.
I was going to say Goofy too.
Yeah. Because Bob Iger is super goofy.
He is. Yeah. That would be fantastic.
Yeah. Well, this was fun.
This was very therapeutic.
Yeah, it was. About something we're not involved in at all.
Not even a little bit.
This is what Beer with Geeks is about.
It is. This is the essence of it. Well, if you wanna pitch in your opinion here, you can send us your thoughts at beerwithgeeks@gmail.com. You can tweet us at beerwithgeeks on Twitter. You can find us at Facebook at beerwithgeeks. You can, of course, find us at Thoughtful Audio, which is where you'll find this show. You'll find Supergirl TV Talk. You'll find Academy Rewind, and you'll find Starkville's House of El Krypton. And, of course, you'll find Hate Watch with us, the newest addition to the Thought Bubble Audio family.
You can also throw your comments in on a baseball.
You can.
Because you said pitch.
Mm-hmm.
See what I did there?
Yeah.
But you talked a little too long, and the joke wasn't good enough,
sorry.
So I had to explain it. That's okay. But you said good things, Frank.
Thanks. You can also leave us iTunes reviews, and you can find us anywhere you find your podcasts. Thanks so much for giving us a listen, guys. We will see you next time. But until then,
cheers.